The date today is the 24th of February,
correct,
2013, and I'm sitting with Terrence McCartney Philgate. Thank you very much for coming. I'd like to start with some facts, and that is, would you tell me where you have lived and the years that you lived there in Harbert Village?
Oh, in Harbert Village, I moved in 72 to Wilcox Street. Mm-hmm. And was there from 72 to 85, then I was away for 5 years, and then back onto Wilcox in 90 till the present.
So you've spent, except for 5 years in between, you've been there since 1972.
Yeah. And I was always in contact with the street because Barker was a good friend of mine and things.
What brought you to that street the first time, and what brought you back?
Both the thing, Barker Fairley, I did a film on him. And, you know, and then he phoned me up. I knew him for, well, about 2 years then, and we'd see him. And he said, there's a house for sale next door, come and buy it. So I went down and bought the house and moved.
You were very obedient.
Yeah. I mean, he was a good friend, and Barker was very... So he said, come and buy it, I always remember that.
So obviously...
I mean, houses cost a lot less, I think it was. It went for sort of under 40,000 in those days.
But I'll bet that probably was still not easy, 40,000 in 1972.
No, but you could, it wasn't a vast interest rate for a mortgage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And...
So were you living next door to him?
Or no, two doors.
Uh-huh.
I'd say, yeah, two doors from him. Three or two, I can't remember.
That was your first motivation. You got a phone call, he said, come, you came, you bought.
Oh yeah, I'd see him regularly, see. And I hadn't thought of the property was never that long on the market, still it goes, you know, in a couple of weeks in this area. And no, Barker said, the house next door, come down, have a look. And I had a production assistant who was into real estate. She eventually became a professional real estate. So she came down and looked at it and said, it's a good buy, because I trusted Leela as her early years. So I had all started doing a profile of him, a film profile. Mm-hmm. I was a CBC producer, and... which I did in 1970. I met him and became friendly.
So you moved there in 1972. Was it a good move for you?
Yes. It was a wonderful area.
What? Please tell me what was wonderful about it.
I don't know. There's a great mix of people. People mind their own business, but a great mix of people. Gosh, who was on the street then? Well, I was saying there was Catherine Coburn. There was Nan Fairley and Barker Fairley. And my next door neighbour then was the Bud Milne. He was the professor of German. And Barker was the professor emeritus of German. And Barker had done his PhD in Germany before the First World War, I mean, in Jena. And he met a man in a pension, and they spent an hour talking, and it then turned out that this guy was Canadian, and they'd be speaking in German to each other, and had come over to recruit somebody to come and teach in the German department or build it in the University of Alberta. Barker goes out in 1913 or so to Alberta, and then from there he came to... well, he lived in Toronto. His wife has a park, his first wife, down here, Margaret Fairley Park.
Oh, right, of course.
Yeah,
Yeah, I know that park. I brought my grandchildren there.
Well, that was his first wife.
Uh-huh.
And she was English also, and she was Dean of Women at the University of Alberta. And then they moved to Toronto, I think, around about the First World War in the beginning. And he became, ultimately... I can't remember when, but before my time a little bit, professor German. and was famous. He's well known for some of his translations, his translation of Faust, Goethe's Faust. Mm-hmm.
So you're saying in answer to my question that you liked the people who surrounded you. Anything more that you want to say about living on Wilcox or living in this neighborhood?
No, there's nothing beyond it's always been friendly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, but without being chummy, you know.
So you respect each other's space and privacy.
Very much so.
And that's important to you.
Yeah.
So you were there until 85, and then you left for 5 years.
I went to Cabbage Town, yeah.
But you came back.
Yeah.
What brought you back?
Don't really know. The house that... It's a long... I mean, the complicated story. I was living with somebody else, and we owned property, and then we split the property. And so I got 94 then. Mm-hmm. And...
So you have been there now, other than that, 5 years, since 1972. Are there some changes that you can describe to me?
Well, it's got more noisy. There's more, student, but there was always a problem with student residences and people boozing it up on Saturday nights, which people still suffer from on Robert Street. A couple of.
So you're saying you have it on Wilcox and they have it on Robert Street? Or do you have it?
No, there's a co-op on right opposite, but that never seems to be particularly noisy. Mm-hmm. On Robert, now I'm speaking outside my own area because
it's down the block.
100, not, it's less than 100 meters away.
Yes.
There's a house that students rent. It used to be the swimming team and they were always drunk and trying to be a bottles on the lawn. So the people who lived over there were always unhappy. But Robert Street's far away. It's
right.
As far as the bottom of your garden there.
Yeah.
And but the atmosphere, it wasn't called the Lower Annex or anything. I think it was always sort of the Sussex.
Right? Sussex Ulster, of course.
Yeah, which still goes. Which was active in the 70s. I don't know when it started, but it was pretty active.
You mean the Residents Association?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's been a very active Residents Association.
But in those days, I said it was active. Mm-hmm. And there wasn't any really big redevelopments going on in the neighborhood.
Is that related to the active Residents Association? The fact that there weren't big developments happening?
Oh, I would think so.
So they fought to keep it.
There wasn't much to complain about.
I don't remember the exact years of the Spadina Expressway issue. Were you there at that time?
Yeah, that started, I suppose, in the late 60s. I wasn't living on the Wilcox, actually, the late 60s. I was up here working for CBC, but I lived in New York then and would commute. Yeah, because the exit ramp was due to drop off about where the end of Wilcox is. So it's going to be the exit onto Spadina. And that was still going on in the 70s. And then under the Davis government, bought a strip of, 3-foot strip of land so they couldn't across it. You'd have to look up the history of that.
So you came at the tail end of it, I think you're saying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we're all grateful that that never happened.
Yeah, well, it would have been, because it would have gone through a big chunk of Forest Hills, so there was a lot of...
So there was resistance up there, too.
Oh, yeah. But to come down through Forest Hills, it would have come all the way. I can't remember exactly, but I know the exit ramps were where we're now.
Well, that would have been the end of this community as it is now. With our...
It would have just destroyed it.
When we were discussing who made up the population of Wilcox, who else was... I mean, you're talking about...
Well, then you had the Portuguese and some Italians, but as a Portuguese, who Portuguesed their houses, I think I'm invented, which is the bottom opening windows. You cut all the wood away and use wrought iron. You take bottom opening window. Somebody in the Portuguese community must have had a special deal on bottom, but they say, because you flattened the roof of the house, you took all this to the Portuguese house.
The Portuguese house, you're using it as a verb?
I invented the verb, yes, way back when. Well, there's a classic case in Robert Street. If you look just where Wilcox, where are we today?
Wilcox moves into Robert Street.
Okay. Right. And you just look across, there's a row of about five charming little houses, and they've all been Portuguese except one at each end, which you can see what it used to be like. And that was about, I think it was being done or had just been done when we moved originally to Wilcox.
And the windows, are those the windows that open sideways?
Mm-hmm.
I know those. Yeah, so you get a little bit of air.
Your bottom opening, when you get your air conditioner in. Uh-huh. And I don't know what it is. Most of the Portuguese came from the Azores, not from Portugal itself.
I used to live on Robert Street.
Oh. Yeah. So I don't know. You know, they were, a big predominance. And just as you look at the school playground, you can see the sort of whole ethnic change and mixture of Toronto, the public school just down the road.
Right. Lansdowne.
Lansdowne, Lord Lansdowne.
So you've watched some changes, different waves of immigration.
Well, that Lord Lansdowne serves more, I think, south. I don't know, it's hard to tell, but maybe south of college. I mean,
and north of college.
Yeah,
because when
north.
I lived on Robert Street, my neighbors went. I lived between Harvard and Wilcox, and my neighbors, the children, certainly went there.
Yeah. No, I was just saying, but I would say the Portuguese, because then it starts to be gentrified, as they used to say, or white painters. I think the white painter word comes in before gentrification. Not that there are any white houses left, but that was the first thing, paint the bricks.
Oh, painting the bricks. So they didn't necessarily paint them white, they just painted them.
Well, there was a tendency to paint white, and then various other colors.
And now they're blasting or sandblasting.
Yeah, that's much more expensive. I mean, that's a very expensive job, to sandblast and repoint.
In terms of the atmosphere of the neighborhood, because you've been here, now it's 41 years, well, for a couple of years off in between, do you see some changes that have occurred?
Well, there's little bits. I mean, originally, way before, when you walk anywhere here, you realize every corner had a corner store. Mm-hmm. And the corner of Spadina, the northwest corner, Spadina and Wilcox, was a little local store run by two Chinese brothers who could also repair clocks. I mean, if you want somebody's gear. And that now is an expense that was bought by, it was a little art gallery for a year or so. And that is an expensive property being done up at northwest corner. But there still was a local store there. And there were plenty, of course, property was cheaper. There were a lot of communal houses, young people. And I remember, and I would have to look up the corner, it would be Robert and Sussex, I think, the corner. There were complaints because they grew cabbage in the first yard, front yards were growing cabbages, which causes a rot smell.
Oh.
That was the origin of Cabbage Town, because the Irish grew people, Cabbage Town, grew cabbages in the front.
So when that happened on Robert Street, people complained?
Yeah, there were complaints, I remember, because there were quite a lot of, the property was cheap and there were a lot of, this is just sort of post-hippie, And so there were lots of houses which, had six, seven people living. Anyway, they, I remember, cultivating their cabbages, and their neighbours complained. Cabbages smelt when they were...
Yeah, and they also smell when they're being cooked, I think, too.
Yeah, but you need to cook a lot to
to
make the difference.
You mentioned some corner stores.
That was the only one left. There's a couple. There's one on Sussex and Brunswick, I think, on the northwest corner. There's a store there still.
And at that time, what were these stores like in, say, 72 to 75?
There used to be one right opposite Lord Lansdowne, which is now a private property. It's never been fully fixed, which I think they were a German couple, a very neat store. They'd sell, tin soup,
peas. When I first moved here, I remember enjoying their lovely old wooden mm-hmm. floors. I remember that.
Right.
So are they still... I know that the store closed about 10 years ago, but...
Right.
But nobody...
Well, no, somebody's fixed it up, and then they've never really opened the front up. There's still sort of paper on the window, and I can't remember. Well, you talked to Tim Knight, have you?
No.
Well, he's president of the Ratepayers Association.
Oh, Tim Grant.
Tim Grant, sorry, yes. Tim Knight. I think it's Tim Grant. But he knows all that sort of detail.
I'll discuss that.
For him, what happened to the store, why did they move?
I certainly watched that store. It was around when I moved onto Robert Street.
Right.
And then, with not very much on the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
And then it closed, yeah. Anything else remarkable or interesting about the stores, whether they were on?
No, because there was that store, there were the two Chinese brothers, who were down to a few tins and milk, I think. I think they were gone by 85.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty certain was in it.
And on Bloor Street or College, did you use those streets much?
I'm just trying to think in those days, if the Dominion had, well, the Metro, I think that was open. But that must have been about that time. College? It wasn't... It was nondescript. It hadn't become Computer Alley.
Uh-huh.
There are a lot of the computers that are empty. There's at least four computer stores empty down there now.
So even the computer stores are...
Yeah, there was a movie house there. The Cinema Lumiere, which is where Home Hardware has moved to.
And that's now closed too?
No, they've just moved down.
Moved to the east. Uh-huh. So the cinema, was that a regular cinema or a special
kind? Yeah, it was one of these cinemas run, I don't know, a couple of people had bought it and ran it. No, it was a legitimate small movie house. So that was quite, that became a Factory Direct. Mm-hmm. We've now moved over to Christie Pitts. And then Home Hardware has come down, gone east, whatever it is, 5 or 6.
Any other movie houses in this
area? No, there was always the Bloor as well, which was a staple of the neighborhood.
I'm so pleased about that.
Yeah.
I am, yeah.
But I can't see all the first run, because I always waited till the first run movies came out of Varsity and things and came to the Bloor, within 3 or 4 weeks.
Oh, so that's a big change.
Yeah.
How the Bloor is being used now.
Oh, yeah. Now it's a documentary and it's flourishing, I hope. But which I'm sure it is, but during the days of taking second runs, of new films. But the Cinema Lumiere was a nice little theatre.
And very convenient for those of us in this neighbourhood.
Mm-hmm. I don't know who. You'd have to go into somebody... I suppose, what's the name of our alderman?
Colin Vaughan.
Colin, he should know. Or somebody in his office, What was the history of the Cinema Lumiere? Well, from the very name, you can tell it was not within the normal run.
Well, that's why I was asking. It sounds like a more artistic kind of...
Yeah, it was.
With a name like that, yeah.
But it was a small house, definitely a small house.
When you started to live here, were there children on the streets, on Wilcox or Robert?
I don't think it wasn't a big child populated neighborhood. I never remember that. I presume you were never conscious of it. Though it must have been more because there used to be an ice cream truck. Robert was one way going north. those. And you could hear the ice cream truck with his playing his tune come up in the summer and would park on the corner of Wilcox things, and then Knightsbeck would go up to Harvard and park near there, but you could hear the music coming from...
Which would get all the kids dragging their parents.
Yes, at the ice cream, so there must be more children.
But there were never... I mean, the houses are quite close to each other, so it could have been a higher density but with children, but it wasn't, you're saying.
Not in those days, I don't think. And who else? Just out of interest, Gail can now tell you, and I'm trying to think, he's a Nobel Prize winner. Where she is now, he rented. He's at the U of T. There's not that number of Nobel Prize winners kicking around the U of T.
So that's, Gail Singer bought her house from...
Not from him, he was renting.
Uh-huh. But she lived there after he did then.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
No, the person who owned that house, I think she's in California, used to commute out to California. And then, my memory for names, the Nobel Prize winner there, with his lady, scandal, she was, got a commission to paint him and made off with him.
Oh, so there's some good...
Oh, yeah.
Good gossip or good stories about Wilcox Street.
Could probably fill you in more. Have you talked to Gail?
No. I don't know how long she's been there. I want people to...
She's been in Africa. Gail moved... Well, I can imagine. She must have moved about 85,
yeah,
I think. 84, 85.
Too late. I want people who are there 1975, speaking at the very latest. So she's just a newcomer for us, for our purposes.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to think. Yeah. Well, Tim would know, Tim Grant, would know who are the old girls. And he very much keeps his finger on the pulse. He's a very good person, too.
Oh, he's fabulous. And, he's the head of the HVR. And hardworking.
But he would know, I'd say, who are the...
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a number of people feeding names to me, just the way I got yours.
Yeah, I was thinking of... you need a Portuguese researcher to go and dig the old ladies out.
Well, I lived next door to a family when I was on Robert at 158, and I have yet to interview them because they came from the Azores, as you know, and there are three generations living there. So I have to call them and make an appointment with them. But you're right, because the woman there doesn't speak English, but her husband does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now you'd need that, I think, with the... I mean, there were always far more older ladies in black mourning than you see now. I think Portuguese have largely moved out. The Italians, who are a bit further west, in this town, when I've done research, the Italians and the Jews almost went in lockstep as immigrant groups. Because the Italians, the Chinese were around City Hall, the original Chinatown, and then just south of there, the Italians had come in, and the Jews were there, and then extend to this area, the Italians keeping a little bit that way, and then they all went off in the late 70s, early 70s, up to Eglinton West. So that's one, those are immigrant groups that sort of...
Do you have any understanding of why they moved? What happened?
I think they all wanted, the suburban, bigger suburban house, I think, basically. With, dreams of glory.
Yeah, I think possibly it was also a measure of success.
Oh, yes, very much. I mean, they worked hard and saved their money and moved. And, there's that whole Italian area along Eglinton West. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that came from down here, the movement. I did research on them once. That's why I sort of know about them.
Mm-hmm. What's your impression about assimilation in this neighborhood in the 70s when you were here?
And Portuguese, they didn't speak English, so I don't know. You'd have to live next door. I mean, absolutely contiguous, I think. The men all worked, made street construction, things like that. Streetcar tracks. there was no any sense of any tension or anything. I don't know what they felt when they saw the staff being the white painters. Or
you mean the people who had been here before, yeah, what they felt to see what was being done?
It's worth looking at the war memorial in Lord Lansdowne in the school, because you look at the war, a long time since I've been in there, but I seem to remember there was a war memorial for the 1418 war and then 39-45, and then you can have a good guess at the Jews in the Kensington market, so probably coming north, but this would have been the outer fringe. Well, you've got the little temple over here.
The Derriver, right?
Yeah.
Just north of Harvard.
Yeah, they always annoy me because they don't put the date it was built. It's got a historic plaque, and I keep on thinking about Bumpton. You say, why don't you have the date?
It'd be so you're right.
Just have a look at the plaque, see, and it says it's preserved. It's a very neat little building with an active congregation, of course, you come on a Friday or Saturday, but I like to see the date.
Yes, it's an oversight. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just have to tell you.
Because the big one down in, and that was 1912, I think, in the Kensington Market. Because I remember when the Kensington Market was always called the Jewish Market.
Yes,
then it was called the Portuguese Market. Now it's just Kensington Market.
Is that a place that you've gone to, used?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And how have you used that?
Restaurants. Mm-hmm. Used to be one called the Blue Wall Portuguese, which did very good chicken piri piri, which is a West African dish from piri piri. And that, of course, has all developed very much so.
And when you say developed, what are you
referring to? Well, in prosperity, the number of stores, restaurants, and things, you know, and it's widened its economic, social range, I would think.
Do you go down sometimes?
Don't eat there very much. If we go out, I do the cooking, but we go locally a lot, more this way.
Does locally mean Harvard or Bloor or
other? Well, we've been going to Momo's for years.
Yes, yeah.
And, I mean, he's been there 32 years or more. So that, if one sort of just goes locally, tend to go to Momo's.
Has he sold it yet? I know he's selling it. I don't know.
Well,
he's got
no sign up or anything. Yeah. Well, that wouldn't be good for a restaurant, say, for sale.
Yeah. But I know he's definitely trying to sell it.
No, I heard that from sources. He owns the whole building, I think.
Yes, he does. And he's also upgraded it. It was pretty shabby when he bought it.
He's worked on it for years. He's got the nicest patio because he put in real grapes.
It's lovely.
It's the only patio I know in town which has genuine grapes hanging there.
So that's a favorite of yours when you're going out to eat.
Oh yeah, I've gone there since either I moved or he moved there. I mean, one local, well, and then of course Bloor Street.
Are there any restaurants on Bloor that you like?
Yeah, because go to Tafel Music was important. In fact, we got a Tafel Music musician staying with us just now. Billeted, as they say. We've had lots of them.
So you do that, Tafel Music knows that they can put people up with
you? Oh, they do. They asked for volunteers years ago.
Oh, so you meet a lot of
musicians. This one's a clarinet player from New York. And he stayed with us before, so we've had all sorts of people.
So that makes your life more interesting.
Yeah, the musicians are all, because they're always camping out, and when they bring in extras or supers, Tafel, then they billet them around.
And of course you live a 5-minute walk from the church.
Which is absolutely perfect. So tend to eat in Tokyo Sushi on concerts, always, which is right across the road. And I was in for lunch the other day to Mount Everest.
It's a favorite of mine.
Well, that's an excellent, and their food is excellent as well.
Yeah, I like their food very much, yeah.
So, I mean, that's another. And whatever other irrelevant things can I think of?
Or relevant.
Yeah, or relevant. But I was trying to think of something which is useful. I mean, spent a great chunk of my life on research for various films.
Using this neighborhood?
Pardon?
Using this neighborhood in any ways?
No. No, Barker was the only, uh-huh. only reason I knew it, because I was living in those days up on Redpath. Not Redpath. Between Avenue Road and Yonge Street. And right up there by Ramsden Park.
What about the roads, the transportation? Comments about that?
Since they've made it a maze, because mm-hmm. that's dropped the traffic enormously, and that's only recently, really, the maze. There were some through streets, as they say.
From going Bloor to college, yeah. and they would race through.
Yeah. So the maze doesn't, when it starts somewhere in the 80s, I think.
Mm. I don't
that,
know. When.
That has been very successful.
Thanks to Richard Gilbert.
Yeah.
And his mm-hmm. hard work. Yeah. And public transportation? Or?
Well, I never thought how much an improvement the streetcar would be over the bus, because remember, Spadina used to be angle parking.
Yes.
Which meant they cut the parking by 50% practically when you took out the angle parking. But how efficient, well, till they're digging the tracks up just now, that streetcar.
Do you ever...
On a dedicated way. And I can't see why there was all the screaming and yelling on St. Clair when they did the same thing. Put dedicated tracks
and
in.
There was plenty of it.
No, there was
but
plenty
of it.
But
for people who use public transportation...
Esther Shiner, there's a name. Esther Shiner was a councilwoman up north mm-hmm. who was vociferously supporting the Spadina...
The expressway,
yeah.
Whoa.
Just don't know why it comes out of my mind, because I just remember from all the political fights.
So there would have been a lot of people in this neighborhood who and Forest Hill who would have
yes.
been angry at her, but she didn't get her way.
No, I don't know what ever happened to her, but she was had a lot of publicity at one time,
mm-hmm. and a lot of it was negative, I suppose.
Well, certainly around
first,
here.
Yeah. Do you feel safe in this neighborhood?
Oh, yeah. Been robbed once, I think. That's all. A walk-in.
During the day or at
mm-hmm.
night? Were you there at the time?
Mm-hmm. Out in the back garden.
Did you know the person had come in?
No.
Oh, so you were in the back garden, the person walked in and walked
in
out
front.
With some of your property.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the only time. I mean, there'd been other break-ins. If I had my car broken into. Because of the back lanes, you know, parking on the back lane.
Had your door been locked or unlocked?
No, it was unlocked.
Unlocked, so they just
walked. No one would pick a lock in the daytime. I mean, you try it.
So they just tried the door, and it was open,
so, yeah.
and they felt welcome.
Well, they walked right in and walked out, my wife's purse and my camera. That's quite a long time ago.
But it's still a bad feeling.
Yeah, but it's not been... the back lanes have been problems.
In what ways?
Well, for break-ins on cars mm-hmm. over the years. I mean, I don't know what the rate is, but it's sort of fairly consistent.
Now, you talk about people parking in the back lanes in garages or...
Just we don't have a garage.
So it's on your property?
On property, but it's
so
just open space.
Right, so it's a quieter place to break in.
There's only, I think, 3 garages on our back lane.
Mm-hmm.
So most people don't build a garage.
Do you lock your door now?
Yeah. I'd usually leave the back sliding door open because mm-hmm. we're a dog neighborhood. I've got 3 dogs and a cat. Is a handful.
Yes.
My wife says 3 dogs are 4 too many.
Do a lot of your neighbors have dogs?
Our street, yeah. Once that Gail's got a dog. Next door to her are 2 dogs.
Sue Dexter has her dog.
Sue Dexter, yes. But she never takes for a walk, and except just out and back. Mm-hmm. Then there's two across the road on Robert, and there's lots of dogs.
Oh, yeah.
It's big. Actually, I've been thinking, watching, the number, a very high proportion of women owners of dogs.
So that's an interesting
I've just started to note, I've always had dogs, but it's really a good thing, because go over often, well, today, it was icy to Central Tech, to the playing field, and that's, though it's a dog verboten area, all the dog owners go there.
I know that spot.
Yeah. And the number, and they're not the wife being sent out to walk the dog, that doesn't work anymore. And but I'm interested, it's a sort of social change. So 50 years ago, dogs were men, cats for women, you know, sort of. But it's quite different. You go to Cherry Beach and see, you know, you may get 50, 100 owners down there on Cherry Beach.
Do you sometimes take your dogs
to
Cherry Beach?
Yeah,
it's a big dog run
Oh,
there.
Yeah, it's big.
Huge.
It's heaven, dog heaven.
Yeah.
But you can, it's very interesting that.
So that's your own personal observation and research.
Well, if you just watch people walking here, you know how many. But I said there must be 5 on our street, counting Sue Ann, I think.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know.
What about people using the street in any way? Sitting around, conversations, the sidewalks.
Don't think, there's no porch sitters on Wilcox. I think everybody's got an adequate backyard. There used to be, and there still are, a lot of porch sitters on Robert Street, where you'd know that.
I was a porch sitter on Robert Street.
And there was a lovely Portuguese man, he's dead now, but he always sat out there.
Mario. Yes,
right.
I lived right across the street from Mario, right across.
Well, see, he sticks in my mind,
yes,
Mario.
Yes, yes. He was lovely.
And he'd always say hello, and we'd have a little chat.
Yeah.
His chair is still there.
Is it?
Mario's chair.
He said to me, anytime you need any help, and he, as I said, he was right across, and it happened once, I did need help, and he came across.
So I think there are, you know, I see, you know, the Portuguese houses and things.
So you're saying it's the Portuguese people who use the front porch?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Except the student residences, there's people. But no, I don't think the co-op opposite us, I don't think people sit outside there.
What about behind the homes? What do you have behind your home?
A garden. Estate.
Do you have any garden? Do you use whatever you have behind
you? No, we've got it. It's patioed with and things. So there's only one bit of thing. It's patioed and so with wood at that time. I don't know. Then really intensive gardening. Got tree problems. I'm getting depressed because
what's
tree,
the matter?
Well, it's starting to grow out and lean on the fence, big tree, and it starts on our property on the parking lot. They're very expensive business to haul a tree down.
Oh, yes. And we've had several that have had to come down from here because they were so rotten. Big, beautiful trees.
Yeah, on the road. Yeah. This is, but where it starts on your property, you're responsible.
Yeah, I know. A few thousand.
It's already leaning against the telephone pole or whatever. Anyway. I won't think about it just now.
Have you changed the heating in your home?
Heating was always for... Yeah, I had a new furnace.
Yeah, but nothing...
No.
You didn't start with coal.
No. I lived in Montreal with that, where you became neurotic about your furnace going out.
Yeah.
Did I rake it? Did I stash it up? And Robertson Davis... In something papers, I can't remember, essays from the 30s, wrote a great thing about furnace and how it governed your life. The stoking and raking it and things.
Well, I was just telling my husband last night that where I grew up in Montreal, for the first, say, 15 years of my life, the landlord lived on the second floor and he turned on the heat whenever it was cold. Then he sold the building, so from 15 years old until I eventually moved out, it was an absentee landlord, so he turned on the heat only when it was required by law. So we talked about heat too, because sometimes we were very cold.
Well, doing this, I lived in Montreal, Lawn Crescent, one floor up, you know, out thing, and each floor had its furnace.
Oh, so you could turn it on and off.
Yeah, but you would live to always have a dead eye stoke it, you know, the idea of it going out while you were out at a party or something.
Or sleeping.
Or having an explosion with your furnace, which is because you're using anthracite, not straight coal, and which would put off gas. And when you stoked your furnace, you didn't close the door, you then threw in a burning newspaper or stick, and there'd be a great woof as it burnt the gas off. Now you could close the door, but if you omitted to do that, you get an explosion in the furnace, which would lift the cover of the furnace off, and you used asbestos cement. It was called furnace cement to seal all the cracks up.
It was a thick kind of...
Yeah.
I remember that covering, a thick
especially
covering.
Now you're really going back, see, and nobody would know what we're talking about, furnace cement made from asbestos, but I remember that.
Yeah. I remember it well, too. Churches, synagogues, any recollection of...
No, they didn't start going to... Well, TAFL doesn't start till the 70s. No, actually the house, 94, and I don't know the right time, the equivalent with the temple, with the synagogue, of the sexton who looked after it. What's the word? There's a word for it.
The person who looked after...
You know, like a church sexton, it's like the manager and sees the furnace is on and everything's repaired and the sexton and does all the lay business of it. Any rate, whoever looked after the little temple over here, he lived at 94.
Ah, oh really?
Yeah.
Ah.
And I remember being so impressed when I got there. His son-in-law would visit, and his son-in-law was well into the 70s. He was very old.
Yes.
And
what about the JCC? Has that been something that's figured into your life at all?
No, JCC doesn't really come up, I suppose, till the last 10, 15 years. You know, when it was redone and becomes much more of a cultural center and things.
It is
yeah.
Both a cultural center,
but
a community
that's modern,
center.
You know, but...
Yeah. You talked about the students living in on your street and sometimes being noisy.
Well, no, this is way back when. We've never had great noise. I think Sue Dexter, because she's contiguous.
Yes.
She's probably... Have you interviewed her?
No, I haven't. I'm on the board of directors with her, but I haven't interviewed her. Do you have any thoughts about the university being so close to our neighborhood?
Not about being close. I have thoughts about its development and the whole business of the student
and what
high rise, the one on Spadina, which is being fought over now at the OMB. And the U.S., it's been bad developers when you look at Fort Jock, the athletic center.
Fort Jock.
And there's Fort Book. You know, Fort Book looks like, you know, the Stasi headquarters or whoever the secret police are.
Very good word for it.
But the Fort Book, that predates the Fort Book's late 60s. Funny, I was coming back from the Kerner Hall the other day thinking, the developments of the university have been very poor architecturally in the last 40 years. They really have not. If you look at the Massey Hall and its sort of little fussiness, dates it to the late 60s. And the athletic complex didn't need to be such a slab of concrete. And the grad student residence with the sign over, you know...
So you're saying that they could have used some more creativity and imagination. I think so. And
they've
beauty.
They've not been generally good developers. You know, they'd be happy to. Their deal, well, you know all about it, because they sell the rights to the land and are not going to manage the building, so.
Well, now we have to wait and see what will happen where we have Top Cuts and the post office.
Yeah.
Because the post office is now empty. So we might have another battle on our hands.
Yeah. And what goes in, and then the one in on the, used to be Ukrainian National Home, and then it became the Buddhist. That's what happens there.
Well, it certainly keeps our ratepayers' associations working. I think that I have kind of touched most of the areas that I was hoping to touch on with you. When you knew that you were coming, did you have any thoughts about what you thought would be interesting for us to...
I do. When I calm my mind, I say just the well-known people, Catherine Coburn. Nan could tell you far more about that. She moved in, I think, around about 64,
ooh,
65.
That's good for me. I will phone
I think somewhere around about that. And so she would have moved in with Barker, that's whatever, when sick. He's 90 or 80, 88 or 90, I can't remember.
What's the feeling, what's your feeling about those of you who are living on Wilcox? Is there a community feeling? Or
I did, only, but it's sort of subliminal unless there's some problem. Things, I can remember odd people. Well, I know Sue well, because we were in the CBC at the same time. And Gail, well. And more of the others are just sort of passing. And there was a weird American family on the corner of Wilcox, north, the northeast side of, who went off sort of during the Cultural Revolution. They were going to go to China and learn traditional Chinese medicine. They were sort of very late hippies. He was at Oise, I remember. That's at the house in the corner, which is a nice house, northeast corner. So it was actually a very nice house with a two-car garage and everything. But they were odd.
Idealistic.
Yes, but it's sort of inappropriately for their possessions. Very American.
Oh, that's interesting.
Very American.
Rich hippies, rich
ideas. No, I don't think, no, we don't. We sort of say hello and we have the back lane due in June. I think it's in June.
A naming of a lane, you mean?
No, the lane behind us, which I'd suggested and other people could be called Barker Fairley Lane.
Has that been accepted? I know
I think
have.
It's been accepted, but and they
oh,
were
so
worried
have
that
a ceremony?
There were too many letters.
I know that there were some issues with that.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's been accepted because he certainly is the most prominent person. And we have a sort of, everybody puts, we put folding tables out and food.
Oh, so you have a kind of a picnic every spring or summer?
I can't remember if it's spring, if it's June, or if it's in the beginning of September, Tim. But it's very nice. Everybody.
So people on Wilcox.
Yeah, well and Robert around there, but come put tell everybody brings dishes.
Oh, so it's a potluck.
It's potluck and lays their food out for everybody.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
And no, it's lovely.
Yeah, it sounds
there's
wonderful.
There's usually about 40 people there. And the kids and no, you should investigate that because that would be a great
maybe I'll
and,
crash it, never mind
I was going
investigate.
To say, no, to crash it and talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Tim Grant, so because that, but it's really nice.
Well, I see Tim and I see Sue every month at our meetings. So.
Yeah, well, ask about.
Another street does it too. It might be Major Street that does
it. Yeah,
that.
I know it's not the only street.
Yeah, but it's a lovely thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure for me to meet you.
You've got my number. Anything I can do, and if you have any problems with Nan, say I spoke, said she was a source of information and things.
I will do that. I just want to say thank you very much.
No, I'd be delighted.